Good afternoon. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody, along with Steve Goldstein. Sunny skies in the valley forecast for the rest of this afternoon. Look for a high of 65 degrees. Sunny weekend on the way as well, with a high tomorrow of 69 up to 71 on Sunday.
In the news, Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton is urging residents to donate money to low-income schools in the city and take a tax credit in the process. He says many of these Title I schools don't get as much money as those in more affluent areas. The money generally pays for after-school programs like art, reading, and sports.
In many districts, they go directly to the parents, and the parents will earmark their tax credit dollars for their child's school. In many of our Title I schools, that's simply not possible. You can't go to the parents of those students to do the $200 tax credit.
Stanton says some of those schools average $3 to $4 per student from the tax credit, while more affluent schools can average $100 per student. Arizonans can get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for extracurricular activities in schools. The limit is $200 for an individual and $400 for joint filers.
Authorities say six people believed to be members of a money laundering organization in Tucson and New York are in custody, while law enforcement is looking for two others. The Arizona Attorney General's office says the drug ring was involved in laundering more than $1.5 million through a Tucson casino and bank accounts from June 2010 through May of this year. Authorities confiscated 84 pounds of marijuana that was sent from Tucson to New York through commercial shipment in October. The AG's office put racketeering liens on 15 bank accounts associated with the six people arrested, plus a Tucson home that authorities believe was paid for with drug money.
The Metro Phoenix housing market has slowed down so much since July that ASU real estate expert Mike Orr now says the balance between buyer and seller has stabilized.
The last time I would regard a market as normal was in the very early part of 2003. But we're back there now, and it feels strange.
Orr's monthly housing report shows home prices up 27% from October of 2012. But the steady rise in prices has put a dent in demand. Investor interest in the metro area also continues to fall off. Orr predicts the region's housing market will continue its slowdown through the holidays.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the show on 91.5 KJZZ. He's Steve Goldstein. I'm Mark Brody. Coming up,
Phoenix police are doing things differently downtown and helping get services for homeless residents.
Two iconic animals are in conflict in southern Arizona.
And we'll hit the ice for some holiday skating.
But first, Arizona's Medicaid expansion plan will have its first day in court this afternoon. The Goldwater Institute filed suit on behalf of several GOP state lawmakers and others, arguing the expansion is unconstitutional. The governor's office then moved to dismiss the suit, arguing the plaintiffs do not have standing to sue. Kurt Altman is the Goldwater Institute's senior litigator and co-counsel on this case. He says part of the suit is based on Proposition 108, which requires a two-thirds vote in the legislature to approve any tax increases.
In a nutshell, the law that was passed by the legislature increases revenues coming into the states. We believe it's a tax that increases revenues, but nonetheless, Prop 108 says any time that a law increases revenues that are coming into the state, new revenues, has to be passed by a supermajority of the legislature. This law, the Medicaid expansion law, was not passed. The funding for the Medicaid expansion, I should say, was not passed by a two-thirds majority, and therefore it violates the constitutional provision known as Prop 108.
So in your mind, what separates a tax, which you argue that this is, from a fee, which is what the governor's office and supporters say it is, since Access is the one collecting it?
In Obamacare, or I should say the Affordable Care Act, they defined a provider tax, which is what this is, a tax on hospitals, as generally redistributive. And it doesn't depend on whether you accept Medicaid or not. And that's really what leads us to the second count of our lawsuit, which is a violation of the separation of powers. And what the governor's office appeared to do is they did an end around and devised a mechanism to collect this funding through the director of Access in order to attempt to avoid the requirements of Prop 108.
Now, you mentioned the hospitals, and one of the arguments that the governor's office has made was that, okay, let's assume for a minute that this is a tax. The Goldwater Institute and the state legislators and the private residents who are named in the lawsuit don't have standing to sue because the hospitals are the ones who would be affected by the tax since they would have to pay it, and they're all in favor of it. They're not complaining about it. So they're arguing, the governor's office is arguing, that you don't have standing to sue in this case.
Well, that is exactly what Friday's hearing is about. Friday's hearing will not reach the merits of this lawsuit. It'll just reach whether our clients have standing. And the reason that the governor's office and the defense in this case is wrong is each one of those legislators who voted against the Medicaid expansion, the funding in this manner, had their vote basically nullified. There were enough votes in the legislature to defeat any kind of new revenues coming into the state under Proposition 108. In other words, there was more than a third no votes. The fact that the governor is attempting to put the law into effect means that those legislators who voted no, who had enough to defeat the bill pursuant to the Constitution, had their votes discounted, completely nullified. Therefore, they were personally injured. Therefore, they have standing to sue in this manner.
Am I right that if the judge rules that you do not have standing to sue, absent an appeal, that would be it for the lawsuit, right?
Absent an appeal, that's correct. Obviously, we don't anticipate needing to do that, and we would certainly consider that at the time if needed.
Kurt Altman is the senior litigator at the Goldwater Institute. He expects a decision on the standing issue early next month.
Jaime Molera of the Molera Alvarez Group and a supporter of Medicaid expansion agrees that the important question is who has legal grounds to challenge the plan.
The issue that I think is important is that the industry really that should have standing, and that the court would say, you know, it seems to us that the hospitals, who are the ones that are going to be assessed this fee in order to draw down the federal funds, it seems that they're the ones that have the real legitimate standing. And so why would the legislature, because, you know, they might have a difference of opinion with the governor, it seems that they're just trying to force themselves in a situation that they really don't have the legal standing to be in.
How much of this potentially is about frustration, this idea that people are opposed to the Affordable Care Act, and how much of it is this feeling that the legislature is supposed to have certain responsibilities, and one of those would be involving taxes, and they feel like the governor in some way is trying to strip them of that power?
Well, and that's the issue. The governor never tried to strip them of the power to tax. You know, the issue is always, can the state legislature and the governor create an assessment on an industry that's specific? And that's what this whole argument about Proposition 108. Proposition 108 says you need a two-thirds vote to raise taxes. But the issue here is that the public is not seeing the tax based on them, or it's not going to be imposed on them. Hospitals will be getting an assessment, but that assessment in statute, in law, cannot be passed to the people that are attending the hospitals. It's similar in a lot of ways. You know, I've dealt with issues like this. When I was state school superintendent, we used to assess teachers when they get their certificates. They'd have to come in and pay a fee for their certificates. And so and the reason it was done that way, the legislature didn't have to do a two-thirds vote on that, is because, you know, it's specific to that industry. Same thing happens with insurance. Insurance companies pay a specific fee for the regulation that occurs. Hospitals are going to be paying a fee for the regulation that occurs within access. So I think the legislature is trying to come up with arguments in order to support why they didn't like this issue in the first place.
I mean, we've had a lot of lawsuits, I'm sure many other states have, related to so many different items. Are we ending up where, if there is bitterness, as there certainly was on this issue, ultimately we're going to end up in court somehow?
Well, you know, and I think let's also look at the organizations that are behind it. I mean, there are associations and nonprofits that they go out and they look for suits. They go out and they convince individuals or legislators that, you know, we should be doing this. In this case, on the Medicaid, is the Goldwater Institute. They recruited these individuals. They're raising money to do it. It's a good fundraising effort for their organization. So I think, you know, let's also look at the money and follow the money and why some organizations are doing this.
That's consultant Jaime Molera.
Come New Year's Day, Arizonans could have a better sense of what it costs to see the doctor. Earlier this year, state lawmakers approved a measure requiring many hospitals and physician practices to make available lists of how much their most common procedures cost for patients who pay out of pocket.
We're not selling things you buy at a shopping mall.
Greg Vigder is the president and CEO of the Arizona Hospital and Healthcare Association. He says price transparency is a good thing and that there's really no defense for how confusing it can be to buy health insurance. Vigder says the information could be useful, but probably not to that many people.
To the extent that we're able to provide information for those people who are going to be out there and actually buying at retail, and they are the minority, then this might give them a little more confidence in terms of getting to the facility they need that's going to be best for them from a cost standpoint. But again, I think there's going to be limited benefit from that in terms of the number of people.
That's due in part to the fact that the prices will generally only apply to the nearly 1 million Arizonans who don't have health insurance or those who do but don't use it. And Vigder says that first number will likely go down as those people sign up either in the health insurance marketplace or for Medicaid. Larry Levy is the executive director of Arizona Community Physicians, a physician-owned group in Tucson focusing mainly on primary care.
Most of the compensation is insurance-based, and there's, you know, specific amounts that the insurance companies are going to pay, and regardless of if you charge, you know, $100 or $1,000, doesn't matter.
Levy says the information isn't going to benefit that many of his practice's patients. He calls it useless. Supporters have touted the law as a way to let patients comparison shop and look for the best deal on their care. But Levy doesn't think that many will do so. He uses the example of a patient who wants a physical.
Call up Dr. A, and he says a physical costs this much. And then you call up Dr. B, and he says a physical costs this much, a different amount. And so here you are, maybe you're trying to shop off of an individual physical, but it doesn't indicate what other peripheral costs you're going to have for the testing that goes with the physical.
Levy says it was easy for his practice to come up with its price list. The Arizona Hospital and Healthcare Association's Greg Vigder expects all of his members to be ready with theirs at the end of the month. But he agrees with Levy that they probably won't get a lot of use.
When people are sick, usually what you're trying to figure out is where can I get the best care that I need? And the pricing considerations have really been secondary.
Vigder believes the law is, in many ways, symbolic. But he says that symbolism is important, especially if it leads to a more understandable pricing system for patients.
Still to come, wildlife relocations have proven successful in bringing back populations of some species, but sometimes at a steep price.
It's not a question about not seeing them restored, but under what conditions. And if our goal is to just have a modified zoo existence for animals, then we should just say no to that.
The cost of moving bighorn sheep in southern Arizona is just ahead. It's The Show.
Good afternoon. This is the final day, the final few hours of the KJZZ end of the year membership campaign. Along with Steve Goldstein, I'm Mark Brody. We're asking you to take just a couple of minutes and give your financial support to your public radio station, KJZZ. Send your support for the show. You can give in two ways, kjzz.org. or by calling 888-774-9150.
This is one clear example of KJZZ delving into more original programming. In addition to NPR that you count on every day and the BBC, The Show is an experiment at this point, but we're still trying to figure out what it is. But it is a news magazine that is covering Phoenix and the Valley, issues that are important to you every day in this community. We're asking you to support this kind of programming. You're making it possible. The number is 888-774-9150. Tell us what you like. Tell us what we could be doing better. Tell us about some great new ideas around the valley at kjzz.org.
Yeah, I dare say that if you stroll across the radio dial in Phoenix, you're not going to find anything even remotely close to this. Would you say that's a fair assessment, Steve?
Well, I think that's true. As someone who's listened to radio here for a long time, and it's faster paced, it's a great magazine show like you've come to expect from All Things Considered, Morning Edition, Weekend Edition. We're doing our best to do as well as they do.
Yeah, I mean, think about everything that you hear on KJZZ, the hard-hitting news, the most important stories of the day, every week a different sound of the city, things you probably don't know. In fact, the whole segment is called Did You Know? Us, under the assumption that maybe you didn't know. All sorts of different interesting things about our community that maybe you knew, maybe you didn't know, and you probably want to know more about. We're asking you to please put a dollar value on that listening. Pledge your support to this kind of programming, to local programming, to hear about our community. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
Members of the Foundation of Public Radio here in the Valley, if you've already called in at 888-774-9150, we thank you so much. much, but this is a great time to make that tax-deductible contribution. Just 3 hours and 40 minutes left in this drive. Do your part now. Say you think the show is important. Say you think public radio in this valley is important with a gift of support. Make the contribution online at kjzz.org.
You also still have a little bit of time left to get into the contest to win the Live It Up in Lisbon, Portugal for two contest. Two people will be going to Lisbon, Portugal, six nights in a four-star resort. Pretty good deal. You have until 6 o'clock tonight to get in on this. That's when the drive will end. But frankly, why wait? Just do it now. You have a couple minutes. Take care of it right now. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
This really is an opportunity to help build the foundation of public radio. This shouldn't be an obligation to you. You should feel good about it, saying that whether I make a $5 a month gift or a $20 a month gift, you're making public radio possible. You're making this news and information resource even stronger going into 2014. The number's 888-774-9150.
The show brings you every Friday afternoon at this time news and information from across the valley, brought to you by your news and information station. You rely on KJZZ. In turn, KJZZ relies on you. It's how public radio works when listeners support it. Please do your part right now at whatever dollar amount fits your budget. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
Quick check of traffic on this Friday afternoon, an accident on the 60 westbound at Dobson. And as far as valley weather is concerned, this weekend we're expecting mostly sunny skies with high temperatures in the upper 60s to lower 70s. We've cooled off quite a bit in the valley today. Relative humidity is at 27%. Mostly sunny skies and 61 degrees at KJZZ. It's the show at 220.
KJZZ is supported by Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Phoenix, offering intraoperative radiation therapy, delivering radiation during surgery to reduce recovery time and help patients get back to their lives sooner. CancerCenter.com.
This is KJZZ. I'm John Huckenberry.
I'm Steve Goldstein.
And I'm Mark Brody. As you go about your day, how often do you get a sense of being valued? How has the world assigned you a value?
How much of your responsibility is it to understand your value as a worker and the things that we do each day? And the answer to that idle dinner party question,
what do you do?
Well, there are a lot of answers to that question, and we could start right at the bottom.
Take this job and shove it.
But there are jobs where the value is self-evident.
Take this job.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
There you go. And there are careers that at least seem to matter a lot.
Take this job and
let's make the most of this beautiful day.
Oh, Mr. Rogers, no argument there. And then there are jobs where the value is, shall we say, self-inflated.
Take this job.
You're fired.
Donald Trump, thank you. There are also people who maybe don't ever have to think about whether what they are doing is valuable at all.
We would search through the rubble to find makeshift desks and chairs or stools or something so that we could sit or they could sit. And we would see those patients right there in the tent, right in the midst in their communities.
Later this hour, a doctor making life and death decisions on the ground in rural areas devastated by the typhoon in the Philippines, improvising hospitals and clinics there, literally out of the rubble. But mostly this hour, we're going to explore the ambiguities of value in our economy. Do you have a sense of your value in the workplace? Tell us what it is. How do you see it? Then tell us if it has anything to do with how much you are paid. We might hear from a banker with a $2 million annual bonus, like the guy I met during the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations years ago, who, as he sat with demonstrators, people who had no idea he was a banker, quietly told me that he was paid way beyond the value of what he did. We might hear from some of you who believe you deserve a big raise. $15 an hour, for instance, making fast food, better benefits for teachers. Let's hear from all of you out there.
Bruce from Tallahassee, Florida. As a judge, I make momentous decisions that affect people's lives and livelihood. I protect people from improper behavior from others. So my job really has significant value. I'm compensated at a lower rate because I am a state employee, but I suppose it's fair enough.
Thanks for that, Bruce. And we've got some wisdom from one of you in McKinney, Texas. The value of your job is what it is able to give back to you, you write. As a philosophy major, my career as a lifelong critical thinker is more rewarding to myself than any dollar amount can surpass. I would do my job for free. Let's welcome Al Ginney to the program right now, professor of business ethics at Loyola University's School of Business Administration. And for Chicago radio listeners, they know him as the longtime resident philosopher at station WBEZ. Al Ginney, welcome.
Good to be with you.
Would you do your job for free?
Absolutely not. In point of fact, my brain and my commitment to my job leads me to do it out of love, but my body, my brother asks, requires at least $55,000 a year.
Perhaps one of the themes of your book, My Job, Myself. How does the economy assign value, and how do we extract our notion of our value from those around us, do you think?
Well, that's a dissertation question, and it's really the heart of the matter. The society doesn't assign value by the real worth of the job. The individual has to decide for themselves, does this have meaning as well as money for me? That quote from the judge, I think, was quite correct. I mean, the judge, in point of fact, makes much less than the trial lawyers in front of them at any given time, especially when you're talking about higher cases of importance in society. But they willingly are there and want to be there, et cetera, et cetera. The comment from the philosophy major sounded a little pretentious, but correct as well. If you really love what you do, there's compensation in that. But it's not simply enough to love what you do. You also have to be paid. And the great inequities in our society is we abuse those who love what they do and don't pay them. And then we don't pay the ones who have no other choice and they take what they can.
We abuse those who love what they do. Boy, that really is a takeaway point right there. That is a nugget. So is there economic value to that loving your job piece? And does it factor into the way businesses make decisions about human resources?
Well, you know, businesses say all the time now, it's the mantra, individuals, our most important asset, our people. And it's really true. It's not just a mantra. And the reality is, good workplaces are workplaces that are productive, and most productive workplaces don't just, you know, accumulate things and gadgets and whatnots. There's a happy workforce.
Al Ginney, what would you advise someone who doesn't see themselves as valued either in their compensation or in their workplace? Is this their own personal responsibility? Is this a join the union kind of a question, or is it some sort of broader societal issue?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of both. And in reality, what choices do we really have when push comes to shove? You either do what you want to do or you do what you need to do. What I tell my students, and I think I've written 3 or 4 books on work at this point, and that's been my work and it's been a passion. In reality, I started writing because I saw these brilliant students winding up in careers they didn't enjoy. And if you're going to find the work you love, you got to do it early, and you got to be willing to say no to certain things. You got to be willing to take chances. I don't think finding work that you love means finding the cure for AIDS. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you did so? I don't think it always means being in charge of incapacitated a child's home or orphanage, et cetera, et cetera. Meaningful work, passionate work, is work for which you are fit, that you enjoy, that you have some competence in, and so therefore that's meaningful for you and you feel you're making some contribution. By the way, I've been a student of life for more years than I want to admit on these airwaves, but in all these 70 plus years, what I found most exciting about life is people who actually fit at what they do, enjoy it, and recognize the pleasure of what they have.
Al Ginney is professor of business ethics at Loyola University's Quinlan School of Business Administration. He's also the author of My Job, Myself. Al, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
That's the Takeaways, John Hockenberry.
Last November, Arizona wildlife officials began a program to reintroduce bighorn sheep to the Santa Catalina Mountains north of Tucson. 31 of the iconic animals were trucked in from a wilderness area, fitted with tracking devices, and offloaded into the mountains. But shortly thereafter, another iconic creature, the native mountain lion, stalked and killed 2 of the bighorns. Then those mountain lions were shot and killed by Arizona Game and Fish. From Tucson, KJZZ's Michelle Marisco looks at the costs and benefits of human attempts to balance out nature.
Within weeks of the release into the mountains, the bighorns began to die. An Arizona Game and Fish officer found the first body on a Saturday afternoon. He turned around and one of the big cats was standing 10 yards behind him. He felt threatened and shot the lion dead. Then a second bighorn's body was found. A tracker using hounds hunted that lion down and killed him. Arizona Game and Fish makes no apologies for the killings. its agency policy, especially in the first case, because the officer feared for his life. Spokesman Mark Hart.
Mortalities are common, and we have always been very direct about our intention to take mountain lions that we can determine have preyed on a bighorn sheep.
That policy will stay in place until the bighorns are reestablished in these mountains. The relocation itself is a project that some conservation groups backed.
This is a case of trying to reestablish the natural order of things on the mountain range.
But some question what the agency means by natural order. Sandy Barr is director of the Sierra Club in Arizona. The organization has approved relocations in the past, especially for endangered species. Man killed off the bighorn sheep in the Catalinas, and then man brought them back. But in order to do that, man needed to kill the mountain lions that threatened the bighorns. But she wonders if, in the end, killing mountain lions for doing what they naturally do won't then put those animals in danger. A recent study found there are only about 70 lions in the mountains where the bighorns now live.
It's not a question about not seeing them restored, but under what conditions. And if our goal is to just have a modified zoo existence for animals, then that is, you know, we should just say no to that.
In other words, instead of a natural order, do we end up creating this?
Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new
managed Disneyland for wildlife.
Motion picture, The Lion King.
For that, I asked Warner Glenn. He was straightening horseshoes on an anvil, his tracking hounds bawled in the distance. He's a rancher and a hunting guide who's trailed mountain lions in the nearby range since he was a kid.
Did a little stint in the Army, but from about 1960 to now, I've been hunting lions.
He says those days of wild nature taking its own course, they're long gone.
Not anymore. There's not a natural order anymore. I mean, things change. One thing is our population of people and the habitat, your mountain lion and all the wildlife habitat is diminishing to the point that it concentrates a lot of your wildlife in certain areas.
So we've already redefined nature in those natural orders. Biologists say successful wildlife management strategies in the West have brought back populations of deer and elk that nearly disappeared. The bighorn sheep will be given their chance in the Catalinas. 30 more will be introduced next year, then 30 more the following. Game and Fish hopes for a herd of 100. Benefit, yes, but the cost may be seen in an unfortunate mountain lion harvest. Michel Marisco, KJZZ News, Tucson.
Good afternoon. Thanks for listening to the show today on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein along with Mark Brody. We're down to the final 3.5 hours of our end-of-year campaign. If you've been procrastinating, don't wait too much longer. Get involved here. Become part of this community resource and make your contribution now online at kjzz.org.
Yeah, you also have limited time to get yourself entered to win the Live It Up in Lisbon, Portugal contest. Two people will be going to Lisbon, the Portuguese capital. You'll spend 6 nights in a 4-star resort, airfare for two on SADA Airlines. Lots of exciting, interesting stuff to do in Lisbon. But the exciting, interesting stuff right now is that you can do your part and make a real difference for your public radio station. Your contribution is vital. It really keeps the show on the air. It keeps All Things Considered on the air, Morning Edition, all of it. It's because of you. So please make your gift right now, kjzz.org, 888-774-9150.
So many important stories that happened across the country this year, whether it's sequestration, whether it's the budget battles. Here in the state, of course, of late, CPS reform, the Medicaid fight. You heard a little bit more about that earlier this hour on the show. KJZZ is on top of these stories, and it's not just on top of stories with little 10-second sound bites. You can really dig in, sink your teeth into the news, and hear analysis from experts who aren't yelling at you. They're telling you what they know, and they're allowing you to think for yourself. That's what public radio is best at. If you appreciate this resource, you obviously do because you're listening, please put a dollar value on it as we're down to the final 3.5 hours of this very short year-end fund drive. The number to call is 888-774-9150.
Thanks so much to Edgar in Scottsdale, who gave online at KJZZ.org. Judith in Aspen, Colorado, gave at KJZZ.org. We heard from Clara in Scottsdale and Lorraine in Chandler, who each gave at by calling 888-774-9150. The reality is, as Steve said, there's not much time left in this drive. It ends tonight at 6 o'clock, as does your opportunity to enter the Live It Up in Lisbon contest. Do your part right now. Make your contribution. Make your voice heard. Stand up and say, yes, this is important. I'm going to give of my financial resources. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
This original production, the show, which you hear every Friday afternoon at 2, along with NPR, the BBC, it's all part of the public service you've come to rely on, that public radio provides you. News and information that you want to expect every day, whether it's starting your day with Morning Edition, ending the day with All Things Considered, or having an original production like The Show or Here and Now, it's here for you so you can learn and enrich your life. Don't miss out on supporting this right now. 888-774-9150 or KJZZ.org.
Yeah, this drive will end tonight at 6 o'clock. Don't be on the outside looking in at that time. Quick check of Valley traffic. The exit ramp on the 60 westbound is blocked at Dobson. Also, an accident on the exit ramp, US 60 westbound at I-10. It'll be clear tonight. Look for overnight lows in the 40s. Right now, it's sunny and 61 degrees at 235.
KJZZ is supported by the Banner Core Center for Orthopedics, a partnership from Banner Health and the Core Institute, providing a fully integrated continuum of care to orthopedic patients worldwide. BannerCoreCenter.com.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jamie McIntyre. A school shooting at a suburban Colorado high has left two students wounded, one seriously, and the suspected gunman, also a student at the school, is dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Arapahoe County Sheriff Grayson Robinson says the suspect was armed with a shotgun and was calling out a particular teacher by name.
The teacher began to understand that he was being looked at, exited the school. One student confronted the armed student and was shot.
That student is listed in critical condition, according to a hospital spokesman. The second student suffered wounds that were described as minor. The school, Arapahoe High School, near Denver, is about 8 miles east of Columbine High School, where two teenage shooters killed 12 classmates and a teacher before killing themselves in 1999. The bipartisan budget agreement, approved overwhelmingly by the House, faces a test vote in the Senate next week. House Speaker John Boehner has been defending the plan against criticism from a number of conservative groups.
When groups come out and criticize an agreement that they've never seen, you begin to wonder just how credible those actions are.
But Republican Senator Marco Rubio has seen the deal, and he told CBS's This Morning that the budget compromise is just compromise for the sake of compromise and doesn't really solve anything.
It increases spending by $60 billion over the next 2 years, but promises to pay for it with cuts over the next 10, something that we know Congress never gets back to actually carrying out.
Republicans are leaning against the measure in the Senate, despite the overwhelming Republican support in the House. Democrats will need at least 5 Republican votes to overcome a filibuster hurdle. On Wall Street today, the Dow closed up 15 points to 15,755. The S&P lost a fraction to 1775, while the NASDAQ composite rose 2. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, working with communities across the nation to build a better future. More at AIA.org.
Good afternoon. It's the show on KJZZ with Steve Goldstein. I'm Mark Brody.
The assumption used to be that every community was going to have a chronically homeless population. How could you possibly get people off the streets? But a concerted effort by the city of Phoenix and a number of organizations has been focused on completely eliminating homelessness among veterans. Also, the Phoenix Police Department's downtown unit is working closely with Central Arizona Shelter Services, or CAS, to do something more productive than arrest homeless people. Mark Holleran, director of CAS, says the improved trust between the organization and police has been decades in the making.
We both have to have each other because ultimately our success is vested in the success of the other. You know, we'll ask the police just in general, you're on the streets, you have eyes and ears out there that we don't, what are you seeing? And then they can reach out in ways that we can't and then report back and say, wow, we're starting to see this, or this is what we've heard, or we've run into this.
Police Commander Jeff Alexander says all of the downtown officers went through training to better understand mental illness and substance abuse so that arrests are far from automatic.
But it's kind of the, I call it quality of life issues that we come across with the homeless population, whether they're, you know, sleeping in a public space, they're urinating, defecating in public. You know, those kind of issues that we come across continuously with the homeless population, it's not going to solve any problems by putting them in jail.
Alexander says the increased collaboration between police and CAS is helping to improve the all-around situation, including for officers.
Now we can take them over to CAS or have CAS come to us and deal directly with this individual. And it does give, I think, officers a little bit of hope in that, you know, this guy that we see every day can finally maybe get him connected with somebody over at CAS to deal with his or her issues.
More attention is being paid to homelessness in Phoenix, perhaps because more people were without shelter after the Great Recession. John Gallagher is a longtime social worker and adjunct professor at ASU. He says collaboration and bringing various services closer together geographically have made a positive difference.
And then also partnerships outside of the service community, like with the police and also with the court systems. It helps the individuals who are experiencing homelessness. It helps service providers be more efficient. But frankly, you know, when a city like Phoenix or Glendale, when they incarcerate someone for a low-level misdemeanor offense that often is driven by their inability to pay a small fee, the city pays exorbitant amounts of money to the county jail to incarcerate.
Gallagher says motivation to reduce homelessness has a number of origins.
Issues of reducing incarceration costs or, you know, minimizing the size of a court docket. I have no problem with those partnerships.
But he does have some concerns when the push is motivated too much by image, like trying to get people off the streets when the Super Bowl comes to town, which it will in 2015.
It's the show on KJZZ, and these are the sounds of the city.
Hi, I'm Eddie Ralph, and I am enjoying ice skating out in Cityscape. Every year they've done it out here, and so it's always looked cool. I've just never done it. So I thought, I'll jump outside my bike to do it for a day. It's different than walking. It's very easy to fall. It's definitely something learned. The nice thing is everybody, I think, is kind of in the same boat. They got a lot of Christmas lights and stuff. They got the big Christmas tree, so it's kind of makes it festive. And they got a lot of Christmas music out, which is really fun. Makes you feel like you're in a place that snows, but obviously we're here in Arizona, so it's like, you know, 50 degrees outside.
That's Eddie Ralph, ice skating with friends at Cityscape in downtown Phoenix. If you've got ideas or hear things that make Phoenix unique, send us a note. The show at KJZZ.org. Cityscape is home to one of the Valley's outdoor holiday rinks, but it's not the only one. Even though wintertime in the Valley doesn't generally include snow, or even temperatures that would allow snow to stick on the ground, you can still pretend you're skating around that massive tree at Rockefeller Center without leaving Phoenix. Pam Gilbert is the director of sales and marketing at the Fairmont Scottsdale Princess, which has had an outdoor rink during the past couple of holiday seasons.
It's definitely driving more people in for dining, but we also have a nice retail experience.
The rink is real ice. Gilbert says there are 9 miles of chillers to keep it frozen, and that about 70% of the skaters are locals. But the outdoor rinks don't seem to be affecting attendance at year-round ones.
At the end of the day, we recognize that they don't really do what we do.
Mike O'Hearn is president of Coyotes Ice LLC, which owns and operates the Ice Den in Scottsdale, less than 3 miles away from the Fairmont.
They do it on such a small level for really such a short time period. To me, it's not a takeaway. If anything, it's kind of an enhancement. It reminds people that skating is fun and it's a great activity. But if there's any spillover that comes from that, you know, they might remember that they enjoyed skating at that facility and say, well, you know what, the ice den's just down the road. Let's go over there now and maybe get involved in their programs.
And O'Hearn says it works the other way, too. For the last 2 years, ice den skaters have produced short shows and performed at the resort.
The kids get a kick out of it. It's a really nice opportunity for them. Of course, the families and parents and everybody of these kids get a chance to come together and come watch them in a different environment.
The Fairmont's Pam Gilbert agrees, saying her rink helps the ice den.
We have lots of kids that come out and try skating for the first time, and this is an easy way to do it and a fun holiday way to do it. And then they find they have an interest, and then they find they have new customers that go and visit them on the year-round basis where they've got ice year-round.
Gilbert says her rink will close for the season in early January, but she also says resort officials are already thinking about ways to improve on it for next year.
Good afternoon. This is the show on KJZZ, a KJZZ original production that goes right along with NPR and the BBC as part of the public service you rely on every day. And now's the time during the final 3 hours and 15 minutes of our year-end drive for you to make that gift of support. The number to call is 888-774-9150 or go online to kjzz.org. Along with Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein.
Yeah, you're running out of time to enter the Live It Up in Lisbon, Portugal for Two contest. This is a really unique opportunity, maybe a place that you've always wanted to go. Well, now you can on someone else's dime. You can win this. Somebody will get a call tonight after 6 o'clock when this drive is over to tell them that they have won. Why not at least give yourself a chance to have it be you? Kelly in Tempe could win this. She became a sustaining member by going to kjzz.org. We also heard from Martha in Phoenix, Kendra in Tempe, and Mark in Scottsdale. Thank you so much. kjzz.org, 888-774-9150.
There's not much time left in this drive, and if you think, well, it just started, it really almost did. Started on Wednesday, is ending tonight at 6. It's a short drive. You're helping us keep these fun drives short by making your generous contribution. And don't forget, it's tax deductible. You're thinking about this in mid-December. It's a good thought as well. Make that gift at whatever amount fits your budget. You know, that might be $5 a month. That would be terrific. If you could afford $20 a month, if you use public radio every day, maybe a dollar a day would fit your budget. That's entirely up to you. But the most important thing right now is to support this news and information service with a gift at 888-774-9150.
This is your last day to support the station you listen to, the station you enjoy. This station relies on you. This is also your only chance during this short drive to show your support for original productions at KJZZ like the show. KJZZ.org. This show brings you closer to the community. You hear about big news events going on. You hear about sort of interesting, I wonder about that. That's what the show brings to you every single Friday afternoon at this time. If you value that, please put a dollar value on that. Make that gift right now. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
There's so much going on in this valley, whether it's CPS reform, whether it's energy reform, and finding out whether solar tariffs are going to, and net metering. That's a very serious issue that Mark covered very much on this program. Also, you've heard about Hot Corner. You've heard Did You Know? These are unique features that KJZZ Original Production is bringing to you with the show. If this is the kind of thing you'd like to hear more of, and we know as a member of the community you do, give us a call right now. This drive ends tonight at 6. Make your contribution now before the end of the year. There's not much time left. 888-774-9150.
Do you listen to the show every Friday? Do you want to listen to the show every Friday? Do you plan to listen to the show every Friday in 2014? Please put a dollar value on that. Maybe become a sustaining member of KJZZ. $10, $15, and $20 can come off your credit card or out of your checking account each month. It's an easy way to spread your contribution throughout the year. It's a predictable and reliable source of income for the station. And you know that every time you turn on your radio or stream the station on your computer or your phone, that you have done your part. It takes just a couple of minutes at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
Public radio stays strong when listeners become members. Thanks so much to all of you who've done that. But if you haven't and you've been thinking about it all year, make that tax-deductible contribution now before this drive ends. In 3 hours and 13 minutes, it'll take you just a minute or so. 888-774-9150.
Quick check of Valley traffic. There's an accident on the US 60 westbound blocking the exit ramp at I-10. It'll be clear tonight across the valley with overnight lows in the 40s. Sunny weekend on the way as well with highs right around in the mid to upper 60s or so. Right now in Phoenix, it is sunny, 61 degrees at KJZZ.
KJZZ is supported by Whole Foods Market, where organic isn't just a trend, it's a way of life. wholesome, fresh, and naturally grown foods that not only benefit the body, but the world around us. Whole Foods Market. Love local.
As the NATO operation in Afghanistan winds down, it brings to an end a decade of fighting for U.S. and other international forces there. So what and where next for the NATO troops? Some critics suggest the organization has already been living on borrowed time, given that the Cold War is long over. And with U.S. military focus shifting east and European allies slashing their defense spending, some say NATO may struggle to remain relevant. The BBC's Jonathan Beal reports.
It's the quiet before the storm on NATO's Eastern Front.
Well, this muddy field in northern Poland, this wet, muddy field, is just shrouded in smoke now from explosions that have been taking place left, right and centre. It's involving 6,000 troops from 20 NATO countries, and it's showing how NATO would respond to an attack on one of its members.
This is the largest live fire exercise by the alliance in nearly a decade, and it's no accident that it's taking place in northern Poland and the Baltic states. It follows large military maneuvers in Russia involving more than 40,000 troops. In this part of Europe, at least, the Cold War hasn't completely thawed. Artis Pabriks is Latvia's defense minister.
We, of course, speak about hypothetical threats in this case, and I don't want to mention countries in name, but we know that we are living in a geopolitical situation where our neighbors are not democratic, where our neighbors are much, much larger than we are. There are also some political views in these countries which are sometimes regarding my country, the Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, even Poland, as their direct sphere of influence, and this is not acceptable for a sovereign nation.
You're talking about Russia, yes?
Well, you can imagine so.
The alliance's newer members might want this exercise to be seen as a warning shot, but in reality, NATO no longer views Russia as an enemy. It's Afghanistan that's held the alliance together in a common cause over the past decade. But with that mission now drawing to a close, NATO's Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen is once again having to explain NATO's relevance to the future.
We must be prepared to defend our allies against all eventualities, even the unexpected. And that's also one of the purposes of this exercise, to improve our ability to work and operate together.
But you can't tell me what the threat is.
Yes, I can tell you a range of threats, from international terrorism over missile threats to cyber attacks.
On the right flank, you can see Estonian company. To your left, Polish platoon.
A lot of the generals who've been watching that demonstration, that exercise, and now meeting the soldiers involved, you have to say a lot of them, the soldiers are wearing Central European, Eastern European uniforms and flags. For example, here, Poland. Also, we've got the Czech Republic. You can see Latvia, Estonia, the Baltic states. Relatively few American uniforms, and even fewer British, which gives you an idea as to who this is important for.
Where do you come from in the States?
California.
Washington State.
For this exercise, the US has sent just a few hundred troops. Some see that as a sign of Washington's dwindling enthusiasm for an alliance, most of whose members have been cutting their defense budgets. And America's military interests are also shifting further east towards the Pacific. But General Philip Breedlove, NATO's most senior military commander, denies America's turning its back on NATO.
What we have said is we're going to shift our focus. No forces will leave Europe and go to Asia. We should take that right off the table. And we could not even begin a more detailed look at Asia without the strong partnerships that we have in NATO. This alliance right now operates very well together. That allows us all to begin to focus a little more on Asia.
NATO is once again at a crossroads, its future less assured with no clear threat on the horizon. And it will need more than exercises to justify its existence.
That's the BBC's Jonathan Beal. Sometimes the commencement speaker at your college graduation is memorable. I can't think of who mine was. Mark, what about you?
I actually do remember it was, at the time, new U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York.
Wow, I guess we should be jealous of that. Next Wednesday, ASU will hold its Hispanic convocation, and the address will be given by a journalist who's best known for his nationally syndicated Ask a Mexican column. Gustavo Arellano says it's hard to turn off his satirical bent, but he's taking this assignment very seriously.
I know there's very few of us who do go through the process, so I am one of those graduates. The whole reason for Hispanic convocation, or in other universities it's called Chicano Latino High graduation ceremony, is to honor those of us who have been able, us few, us proud, us Latinos who are graduating. So in a way, I'm talking to my peers instead of just, you know, making a bunch of jokes. I'm going to be able to talk to my peers.
And Arellano says he's going to try to touch members of the audience, but hopes to get some laughs. After all, he's got a reputation to live up to.
I do love the fact, though, that if people know me at all, any notoriety is because of Ask a Mexican. So while they expect one thing, I always try to give them something else. So, of course, me, the way I speak, I'm always going to try to be irreverent. I never try to stick to any particular script of what I'm supposed to be. So sometimes I'm going to be serious. Sometimes I will try to be funny. But more than anything, I try to leave some sort of point. For me, the way I see myself is, if I at least get one fan or at least touch one person in my presentation, then for me, that's a success.
Gustavo Arellano, keynote speaker at ASU's Fall 2013 Hispanic Convocation. It's next Wednesday at 11:30 in the morning.
Have you walked the wetlands in the West Valley? The area is filled with birds, petroglyphs, and hiking trails, but there's more to this place than meets the eye. KJZZ's Nadine Arroyo-Rodriguez tells us why a hill in the area overlooking the valley has so much historical and legal significance.
Monument Hill is a viewing spot in the West Valley. It's a faraway seat to the Phoenix International Raceway and where you get a bird's-eye view of that side of town. Did you know Monument Hill is the state's initial point for the public land survey system?
Monument Hill is the starting point for Arizona, and the name of it is the Gila and Salt River Meridian.
Brian Fisher is an Arizona land surveyor with the Central Arizona Project and teaches land surveying at Phoenix College.
There's tens of thousands of points that are measured off of that station.
Monument Hill is a 150-foot slope located on 115th Avenue, just east of Phoenix International Raceway. A concrete X marks the spot where measurements of the state's land initially started. It's the epicenter of all surveying for property deeds.
For any land to be privately owned by a citizen of the United States, it needs to be surveyed in the public land survey system in Arizona and most of the western states.
Fisher says Monument Hill has been the center point for measuring the state's land since 1851. It was identified by the federal government while canvassing the area for the United States-Mexico boundary under the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, the peace treaty that ended the Mexican-American War and made the southwestern states U.S. territories. The first 36 miles of Arizona was surveyed in 1867.
Back in that era, they were using probably a steel tape. They tried to hold it parallel to the ground. And in the most modern sense, used satellite survey methods, or GPS, global positioning system.
The valley can be clearly seen from the top of Monument Hill. To the north is Avondale, to the south is Estrella Mountain, and to the east and west is a line that seems to go on without end. That's Baseline Road. Yes, you guessed it. Fisher says the road got its name for the Baseline and Meridian Survey that helps mark the center spot. And here's a bit of land surveying info that may be useful for this holiday season. I was told that if you travel 115th Avenue straight north, you'd end up at the North Pole. It's the show. I'm Nadine Arroyo-Rodriguez.
So we want to know what you know. Send us a note. The show at KJZZ.org.
And since this is a vast valley, Mark, a lot of things going on
lots
this weekend.
And lots.
A couple of things we're probably going to be doing. We're going to be hanging out this weekend at the Phoenix Festival for the Arts at Margaret T. Hance Park in downtown Phoenix. An arts event, as you would have guessed from the name, featuring vendors, live music, dancing. opera, film, poetry, and your favorite thing, food.
Ooh, I do like food. Tomorrow, the Fantasy of Lights Boat Parade at Tempe Beach Park. Live entertainment, again, food, luminaria, Santa Claus, and there'll be fireworks to top off the evening.
How about the True Music Festival at Salt River Fields at Talking Stick? That gets underway tomorrow morning at 11. Wide range of music from Wiz Khalifa. I'm not familiar with Wiz Khalifa.
Nor am I.
But the Flaming Lips. I sure know the Flaming Lips. That's how I feel in the morning without chapstick.
That's right. That's unfortunate. Moving right along, the Arizona Balloon Classic is this weekend. It's at Gilbert Civic Center. Hot air balloon races, music, and again, fireworks.
And if you want to catch the surprising Phoenix Suns, they're at home for a couple of games this weekend. They're hosting the Sacramento Kings tonight, and then the Golden State Warriors on Sunday evening. That's at U.S. Airways Center in downtown Phoenix.
Good afternoon. Thanks for listening to the show this afternoon. We are also in the midst of the final hours of the KJZZ end of the year membership campaign. What does that mean? Well, it means you just have a couple of hours left to show your support for your public radio station, KJZZ, and to get in on a contest.
Lisbon, Portugal. Live it up in Lisbon. I wanted to keep that music because that's going to get you to the phones right there.
Well, it feels like you're living it up.
Absolutely. 888-774-9150 is the number to call to make your tax-deductible gift. And as Mark said, you have a chance to win a Live It Up in Lisbon, Portugal contest for two. The winner will be drawn tonight after 6 p.m. So if you want a chance to win this, and who doesn't? Because you're going to give us a call, you're going to contribute to public radio, and have a chance to win an amazing trip you might not have planned for yourself. But you've only got 3 hours left to do it. You've got a minute now, so get in. KJZZ.org.
How often do you listen to KJZZ? Do you listen every morning as you're driving to work or driving to run your errands or bring the kids to school? Do you listen to Steve every afternoon on your way home? Do you listen to the show every week? Think about the unique service that public radio is, and especially the unique service that the show is. There's nothing else quite like it on the radio in Phoenix. Please put a dollar value on that. Show that you support in-depth news about our community here on the show. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
The biggest news of the day, along with arts and culture, fun tidbits like Did You Know and Sounds of the City. Again, not hearing this anyplace else on the dial, so now's the time to give your support for this news and information resource that survives and thrives because of your contribution. Go online, please, right now, KJZZ.org.
Thank you so much to Misty in Peoria, became a new sustaining member. We heard from Michael in Tempe, Fred in Sun City, a sustaining member. Some of the people who have stepped forward and said, yes, this is important to me. I'm going to show my support. I'm also going to get myself entered to win a trip for two to Lisbon, Portugal, 6 nights in a 4-star hotel. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
Again, this short fun drive ends tonight at 6. We hope you'll have done your part and made your contribution to the future of public radio, this news and information resource in the Valley. Give us a call at 1-888-774-9150 or online at KJZZ.org. Thanks very much for listening to the show today. For Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. This is listener-supported KJZZ FM Phoenix and HD. Still time to make your contribution. 888-774-9150. And thanks.